Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Before we jump in, we want to thank the Cosmos community for their sponsorship in making this episode possible. There are several projects building inter-blockchain communication protocols, but there's one that's currently built. Cosmos.network is on a mission to link every blockchain. Well-known projects like Terra, Band, Kava, and Secret use Cosmos and the Cosmos Hub to connect to every other chain in their network. The Cosmos Hub is completed and launched, and you could visit Cosmos.network today to check it out. The Cosmos Hub brings us that much closer to Web 3.0, and we thank the Cosmos community for sponsoring the Delphi podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Delphi's Clubhouse. Today, we have on quite the powerhouse of Cosmos stars, pun intended. We're going to discuss everything that has to do with Cosmos. Pretty amped to dive in. So we have a lot of people on the pod. So we'll start clockwise. Joe, why don't you introduce yourself, and we'll go to Yelena after you.
All right. Well, my internet name is Joe Dierte. I started as just a Cosmos community member, and it my role, or I guess you could say, just grew over time, and then I got involved in a community and on-chain governance funded marketing campaign for Atom, and that's how I got in contact with Tom, and that's why this is happening. So thank you.
Yeah. You got involved in a multi-sig that changed your life, is that what you're saying, Joe?
More or less. My first DAO experience has been very interesting.
Joe's just winging it at this point. Here he is. Yelena, you're up next.
Awesome. Yeah, Joe, thank you so much for putting this together. You've been crushing it with the Prop 34 stuff. So hi, everyone. My name's Yelena. I work at Informal Systems, which is a core contributor to the Cosmos Project with Ethan, who's here in the room. Before that, worked for a couple other sort of layer one blockchain projects, most recently the Celo Project, and then before that, Definity, which is about to have their mainnet. So that's really exciting to see. And then, yeah, before that, I was actually working as a lobbyist here in Canada. So yeah, I'm in Toronto and excited to be here to talk about Cosmos, IBC, and all the fun stuff around Atom. Thanks. Awesome. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Zachy, you're up.
Hi, I'm Zachy. I've been a contributor to Cosmos basically forever. Here to hang out and talk about Atom.
Hell yeah. Glad to have you. Jack, you're up.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Jack Zamplin. I'm also a Cosmos person. Been doing core dev since about 2018 and working with Zachy on a new project now.
Sunny?
Hey guys, my name is Sunny. I've been working on Cosmos for the last 4 years. Used to be at Tendermint, and I run a validator called Sika. Working on a project now called Osmosis, and just have my hands juggling many different things within the Cosmos ecosystem.
That's awesome. And Ethan, you're last up.
Hi all, Ethan here, co-founder of Cosmos. Today, now CEO of Informal Systems, which is a continuing to do core R&D in the Cosmos ecosystem with a focus on formal verification. And we're also running the Cephalopod equipment validator. So check that out if you're looking for a good place to delegate some atoms.
Yeah, also Pylon validator. I need to get better at shilling my validator.
We'll link to all of them.
You shill enough.
We'll definitely link to all of them in the show notes. I'll have to use some randomization or alphabetize them or something so I don't play favorites. But who has the best pitch?
We're renaming to ASICA, by the way. Just heads up.
Oh, wow. Okay. You win there, then.
Why?
So we're first alphabetically.
That's smart.
It's a good way to play it. So who has the best 30-second pitch on what Cosmos is? I'm sure you guys all have your own, but who has it?
That's Ethan or Jack should go for it. Is that?
Well, 5-second pitches. 5-second pitches. It's the internet of blockchains.
The same sort of permissionless network structure that the internet has, but applied to a network of connected blockchains.
So if somebody's brand new to Cosmos, they're a huge ETH bull, they're a huge Bitcoin bull, what do you tell them is different about Cosmos?
I think the best way to phrase it is, the Bitcoin blockchain ecosystem started as all these like sovereign chains with each of their own applications, right? You had like Bitcoin doing money, you had Namecoin doing DNS, you had like Saya doing storage, and then, but these were all like siloed, right? You couldn't use, at the end of the day, everyone just wants to use Bitcoin for everything, right? Like, I want to use Bitcoin to buy my DNS name. I want to use Bitcoin to like pay for storage. I don't want to use all these like random other coins. And Ethereum came along and kind of solved that, but it like came with all these like, I did it by putting everything on one blockchain, which comes with all of its own problems. And so Cosmos is basically saying like, hey, how can we get all those composability benefits that like Ethereum provided, but still have like, not the drawbacks that Ethereum came with. I guess we can go into those drawbacks, mostly around scalability, technical, social scalability, things like that.
Yeah, let's dive right into it. And let's keep this illustrative for people. If all of DeFi was launched on Cosmos right now, what exactly would that look like? Would every app have its own chain? Would they all have the same security level? How would they all talk to each other? Because everyone knows like Ethereum, most know Cosmos, but how do we put that into like fine grained terms for people?
So I'll take a crack at that. So if all of DeFi was running on top of Cosmos right now, you would have chains that specialized in being DEXs. You would have chains that specialize in like what Sunny's working on or the Gravity DEX that's coming to the Cosmos Hub. You would have chains that specialize in lending. You would have chains that specialize in stable coins. You might have like a futures chain or an options chain, each running their own sort of and you would imagine that all of these things would be specialized, and there would be both token transfers, so just which is what we call ICS-20, which is a standard for moving tokens between blockchains, but there also could be like more application specific protocols, things like you could have orders and exchanges actually happening on the IBC layer. And yet to be invented sort of protocols for things like staking derivatives sort of asset collateralization across chains could all be running on top of IBC protocols. When we talk about all of this stuff, and if you've been sort of watching the blockchain space, this actually seems like kind of the way the world is going anyways. More and more application-specific blockchains are coming. Compound is launching their own. Lots of projects are launching Cosmos SDK chains. And so the Cosmos vision of what DeFi looks like does seem to be like sort of the inevitable future of DeFi anyways.
It's awesome. Now, it really brings into color. And I guess the next question on this is every app, I guess, can have its own application-specific blockchain, and they all get to pick their own level of security. Whereas on Ethereum, you have this one slate of security. But that has its own trade-offs. What are the differences on being able to choose your own level of security? And how does a developer actually do that? And sorry for not pointing out people to ask. I'm just lobbing these out there.
Yeah, Bucky, do you want to cover shared security a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I'll just say that these are pretty early days for that security model. And so right now it's a matter of, there are a set of some, maybe 100 or a few hundred professional validators out there who are, looking for chains to validate on and participate in their, in their fundraiser to get tokens and then to help secure the network. And the sort of model Cosmos has gone for initially is, this very separate sort of every chain for itself to find its own validator set, ideally to draw it from the, community of supporters that care about that particular application it's hosting. And its token and its tokenomics and so on. We're seeing already a lot of validators, a lot of the validator companies are running across multiple chains, and we're already, there's a sort of ongoing R&D efforts to take advantage of that and to reduce the overhead for new applications to source validator sets and to create more of like, say, a direct marketplace so that this is actually more of a formalized
process and isn't this kind of ad hoc thing that's happening in the background, so that there will actually be explicit protocols for discovering validators and attracting them to validate your app. But we're also working on shared security protocols to make it so that you actually don't necessarily need to find a separate validator set. You can leverage validators from the Cosmos Hub and sort of have that be part of your chain launch, let's say. So there's a lot. This is going to evolve considerably over the year and the next few years as sort of the validator marketplaces start to emerge. But I think in the longer term, the idea here, the essence is to reduce the layer of abstraction between infrastructure and applications, because so much gets lost when you abstract away the infrastructure. And, it's just like some anonymous cloud of miners or, Jeff Bezos's empire. And so the goal is to sort of bring that infrastructure closer to the users and surface it into the application so that it's something you actually are supposed to care about. And a lot of people think that's like a bad thing. And it just puts more burden on users to like think about things they don't care about. But, that's how you solve the critical problems we have in the world that are brought about by the layer of abstraction between infrastructure and applications. And if users, aren't given the option to reckon with it, then nothing's going to change. And we're going to have the same kind of, technology empires that we created in Web 2.0 and Web 3.0. And that's something, we don't want. So, yeah.
If I can sort of just jump in there and sort of add some color to what Ethan said and reiterate something super important about chair security, or what we're calling interchain staking in the Cosmos world. The idea is that Cosmos Hub validators will be able to opt in to validating sort of chains that come online, right? Chains, with maybe a smaller market cap, maybe not as kind of recognized in the marketplace. But the beautiful thing is it's still opt-in, right? And I think that really speaks to the sort of philosophy around Cosmos, which is this idea of sovereignty. So, there are chains out there that, exist sovereign, independent of the Cosmos Hub. The extent to which they want to interoperate with the hub is totally, choose your own adventure. And I think that's something that, to Tom's questions earlier, sort of comparing it to Ethereum or maybe other sort of chains out in the ecosystem, I think is really distinct. And I think one of the reasons sort of I joined this ecosystem is, usually we think of economies just generally in, kind of everyday life as something sort of jurisdictionally defined, right? We have a Canadian economy, we have a European Union economy, we have an American economy, but now, I think with Cosmos, like the vision that Cosmos is sort of, offering to the world is you can have a digital economy where sort of the building blocks of your economy are sort of preset. You can, again, choose your own adventure. You can leverage Tendermint, for consensus. You can leverage the SDK to build this application-specific blockchain. Again, there's going to be other sort of use cases within Cosmos that are coming up very shortly, like, shared security, to make sure that your economy is, secured in however, you want to define it. So I think that's incredibly powerful that, Cosmos is really sort of, I think, a huge innovation on top of Ethereum and other chains in it from a sovereignty perspective. So yeah, that's sort of what I want to add.
Yeah, Yelena, I think those are really great points. And I think towards the end you were talking about kind of this comparison between Cosmos and Ethereum. And while I think that Tom, you talked at the beginning about how all applications on Ethereum kind of share the same security level. At a base database and chain level, yes, they do. But at an application level, each application is generally governed by some kind of multisig. And that level of security can vary quite widely across applications. Whereas right now in the Cosmos ecosystem, and even moving forward with shared security, all chains will have this sort of validator set security assumption, which in some ways for a lot of applications is going to end up being better than multisig. So that is one thing that we missed that I kind of wanted to point out.
Jack, that's awesome. And Yelena, great comments, and Ethan. And just to ask again on that second point, is what you're saying that the validators for the specific application-specific blockchain, would that have a link to the token holders for that chain per se? Or like, what exactly is the link there?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a direct link between the voting power on the chain and the token holders. So it's a staking-based system. So when you're a user and you want to help secure the network and there are staking incentives for this, you would stake with one of the validators that's helping run the chain. And the power that each of those validators has in securing the chain is based on the amount of stake that's sitting on top of them. And they also have influence and governance as well. You know, there's some proposals that I think Sunny has to change that, which we can talk about. But, you know, that's roughly how it works.
That's awesome. And another dumb question, but hell, you guys are the experts. What do you get
from... No dumb questions.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, what do you get from having this like tunable security level? Like how exactly does that benefit different applications? Like, you know, let's say I'm building a MakerDAO, but and then, you know, on another side, let's say I'm building like a high performance perpetuals app chain. Like, what are the differences you get here on security, on speed, on not overpaying for security? How does that all shake out?
I'll just make one quick comment about it and I'll let someone else take over. One thing that I really like about it is that it's not one size fits all, and not everything needs the same settlement assurances. Like base layer Bitcoin obviously needs super high settlement assurances, but if you're doing like trading NFTs or CryptoKitties or something, maybe you don't need that same level of settlement assurance. So you don't have to pay as much for your security. Maybe let's say you only have to rent $5 million of security out, where if you're settling massive financial transactions, you might need to rent $5 billion of security. So I like how it's flexible in that sense. But that was just my one comment.
No, I agree, Joe. Shoot, Jeff.
Yeah, it makes it easy to kind of scale the security with your application. And I think that that's actually something that people want. This idea of sovereignty is something that kind of comes up a lot within the Cosmos ecosystem. And when you're running on top of a platform, you kind of lose that in some ways. And the reason why people are okay with that on these large common platforms like Ethereum is that they're really decidedly neutral. And, you know, I know Sunny has some thoughts about this as well. But, you know, there's a lot of applications, and a huge application of the Cosmos SDK has ended up becoming exchange chains. And those exchanges want to run on their own infrastructure. They want to have their own security assumptions and run their own systems, but still be able to interoperate with the rest of the crypto world. And that's really what Cosmos offers.
I think Zachy and I were chatting with this a couple weeks ago, but I think a lot of the times when it comes to kind of security and throughput, like we're compared to actually layer twos in the Ethereum ecosystem, like a Matic, for example. And, you know, keen to hear what others on the call have to say about this. But from my understanding, because of the sovereign sort of nature of Cosmos, like a chain within the ecosystem doesn't have to sort of worry that other chains will become, too super popular and that they'll make their, you know, app or whatever unusable because there's that sovereign sort of interoperable nature between chains versus like a layer two, like let's say a Matic, you know, somewhat relies still on the base layer Ethereum in terms of, you know, gas prices and things like this. Obviously, I think the layer two system is like highly complicated, so I don't want to make any sort of generalizations necessarily, but there is definitely that distinction between Cosmos and let's say the layer two system and Ethereum.
Right, but it's generally true that by separating it out the way Cosmos does into independent validator sets, the apps aren't competing for the same kind of resource. They are still competing for a kind of resource, which is validators in the first place, but that's much more flexible and elastic, let's say, than the block space of a single L1 like Ethereum. So whereas all the apps on Ethereum are competing for the same block space and they're limited by the gas cap and you know how much each app is willing to pay. And so if you're a small app and you know you can't justify paying hundreds of dollars in fees and the fees are hundreds of dollars in Ethereum, well, there's nothing you can do, right? And so the idea of having, you know, one size fits all, it kind of doesn't, right? So that's really one of the key problems that Cosmos is trying to solve by saying, well, you can avoid that. Yes, there's a cost to avoiding that, which is you have to figure out your own validator set, but the benefit is then you're not subject to the, you know, the political economic conditions of this thing that's much larger than you that you can't control. And maybe you want to be subject to that, maybe you want to be part of that, but you know, unless you're one of the top applications, it's going to be hard to justify the economic costs and the fees your user are going to have to pay.
That's awesome. So two follow-up questions for Ethan and Yelena, whoever wants to take this. If you get to not overpay for security as an app, is the main thing that users are going to see is just a lower transaction cost? And then I guess my follow-up question is, from the validator perspective, like if I start a new application, is there like a standby list of like, hey, you know what, I need 10 validators, or hey, I need 100, or is it more opt-in, like they have to convince the validators to use their chain, or how does that side work?
There's a lot of flexibility. One of the main things is they're going to see lower fees, but they're also going to see a validator set that's more actually invested in their application, right? Like Ethereum can make governance decisions, Ethereum miners can make governance decisions that don't necessarily take into account the applications. You know, so if you're an application, the Ethereum system might upgrade in some way that sort of screws you or breaks all your smart contracts. I mean, this has happened in the past to a few big Ethereum applications. Whereas the validator set of an application-specific chain is specifically invested in that application. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it, right? Because that's the only application running there. And so if they're making upgrades, the upgrades are in the interest of the application and presumably the application's users, and the validators are trying to get more users to pay more fees and so on. Sorry, I forgot the second question.
No. I want to tackle the second question. I have a lot of opinions about this. So if you kind of look at the historical sort of life cycle of a Cosmos blockchain, so this is sort of pre-IBC and pre-Gravity Dex, which is like, you know, sort of the last 2 years, where basically what would happen is someone decides they want to build an application-specific Cosmos chain, like let's say Kava or Akash. They would basically recreate in micro the process that we did for Atom when we like launched the Cosmos chain. They would typically build a blockchain with the Cosmos SDK, like recruit validators, sell tokens to validators, recruit delegation, like bootstrap their chain, get exchanges to list them, get the token to like circulate, and then the token would have value. And we've seen, you know, all more than a dozen chains kind of go through the same process. IBC really changes that, and like specifically like the rise of DEXs within the Cosmos ecosystem really, because you can, like, when you connect to the IBC network, when you connect your blockchain to the IBC network, no one knows or potentially really cares if all you're doing is like you and your friends are running a couple of nodes like in your basements. The Cosmos network doesn't care. IBC will connect to anything. And, you know, IBC will connect to a single node Tendermint chain that is running on, you know, running like on your laptop. Like all of these things are just like, you know, it's the classic, the internet, no one knows you're a dog model of just like trustless interconnectivity. And this creates like an entirely different way for chains to bootstrap themselves into existence, recruit validators, accrue value to the token. You know, staking tokens for new chains on Cosmos will just be available on DEXs for any validator to like buy and become part of networks that are interested in them. Like this entire bootstrapping process is likely to change like dramatically, basically in the next month.
That's awesome, Zaki. Great color. And I guess one of my last questions on the security side of things, are there any issues or attack vectors with having differing levels of security for each application? Like let's say I have two DeFi apps and like, you know, I borrow money on one, I send it to another, but you know, the first app is easier to attack, the second app is harder to attack. Like, I guess I'm a little lost there because I don't know like if the amount at stake within the specific app scales with how many validators you have?
Kinda,
that's my question.
Kind of goes back to that comment I said earlier about settlement assurances. So like not everybody needs the same settlement assurances, but let's just say you have a chain that all the tokens combined are worth $50 million. If someone tries to send in $100 million of Atom, those validators, if they were being rational actors and just using game theory, they're better off stealing all of that Atom than they are continuing the life of their chain. So the higher the amount of value that is like skin in the game and staked, the higher the settlement assurances are for those transactions. Because if those validators lie, cheat, or steal, they have way more skin in the game to get slashed. So, yeah.
I mean, also, Joe, that's a great point. Going back to my comment earlier about how there's a differing level of security for apps on Ethereum based on the multisigs, I think we've seen over and over again what happens when you have interoperability between applications with differing levels of security. There are issues where people walk away with money. We call it rug pulling in Ethereum. But, you know, that's the way it manifests with a multisig, adding validator set security. And then as we roll out shared security, it actually offers better assumptions for a lot of apps.
That's awesome. And all right, guys, that's awesome. Let's switch over a bit to IBC. What exactly is the Inter-Blockchain Communications Protocol? And how does it, I guess, further the ecosystem of application-specific blockchains built on Cosmos?
Yeah, so IBC is basically this generalized protocol that will allow any two blockchains to talk to each other. And you can think of it, you know, use the analogy we like to use, it's like the TCP/IP of blockchains, where TCP/IP was this like stack that, you know, you implement it in all of these different OSs, and then they're going to be able to talk to each other and communicate. And IBC kind of actually really refers to two different stacks in a way. I call it like, you know, lower level IBC and higher level IBC. The lower level is like what allows two chains to just talk to each other. So, you know, you can implement this in, just like you implement TCP/IP in different OSs, you implement the IBC like protocol in different blockchain development frameworks. So, you know, currently it's implemented in the Cosmos SDK, but, you know, there's work being done on implementing it in all sorts of frameworks like, you know, Substrate. I know people are working adding it to Celo. I know there's some work on thinking about how to add it to Solana. But this just allows like any two chains that support this IBC protocol to be able to talk to each other. Then once you have that, you need, you know, the higher level IBC protocols, which is like, what are we talking about? And this is kind of like in TCP/IP, you know, you need these higher level protocols on top of it, such as FTP for file transfer protocol, or SMTP for mail, or HTTP for web. You need these sort of protocols as well in the IBC world. And so, you know, like Zaki mentioned, there's the ICS-20, which is for token transfers. There's other ICSs being developed as well. So ICS stands for interchange standards. And, you know, there's, you know, things for like NFT transfers. There'll be things for cross-chain like data, like Oracle kind of data, or cross-chain EVM calls. And so, you know, over time, we're just going to see a development of more and more of these higher level protocols built on top of IBC as well, that will enable us to do like much more complicated tasks throughout the interchain other than just token transfers.
That's awesome, Sunny. And another naive question, but just to frame this, I mean, if you're on Ethereum, you don't need something like IBC, right? Because all the apps could speak to each other natively, but obviously you don't get the trade-offs that we discussed here.
That's right. On Ethereum, you have the inherent ability for contracts to call other contracts. And then they've built standards on top of that. So there's, you know, there's the call opcode, which allows one contract to call any other contract, that's sort of built into EVM. And then there are the conventions that are built on top, like ERC-20 and 721 and all the sort of other conventions for how to structure calls between contracts.
That's awesome. And so how do I get, and I know IBC's, you know, just launched, I know it's been in the making a while, but how do I get as a developer like that automated ability to use IBC? Like if I build a chain on Cosmos, I'm assuming using the Cosmos SDK, do I automatically like have compatibility with other chains, or how does that all work?
Yep. Yeah, it's out of the box.
Oh, baby. That's easy.
I would encourage people to look at Map of Zones today to see all the beautiful connections being made in Cosmos with IBC. Sort of some main chains are already connected with IBC is obviously the Cosmos Hub, Akash, Iris, so many, many more to come.
Yeah, also, one thing I will note about Map of Zones, not a whole ton of traffic on there right now. I expect to see a lot more pickup with the DEX testnet. People will be testing the sort of interchain swap capabilities of the DEX. And then again, when the DEX is live, we should see a lot more activity on IBC.
Yeah, no, I'm on here now. I mean, the list is awesome. Spoke to Akash's CEO the other day, so it's cool to see them on there too. This is cool, guys. And
Greg's great.
Yeah, he's awesome. You know, just to circle back. So is IBC fully launched today and all its features and functionality, or is it still early stages, or am I late here?
So the version we have today, which is version 1.0, has all of the core functionality and ICS-20, which is the token transfer. So right now, the only sort of application level thing you can do with IBC is transfer tokens from one chain to another sort of unidirectionally, which is basically the core sidechain functionality, right? Sidechains effectively from 2014, you know, that's what is at the heart of the IBC mechanism that allows you to send tokens from one chain onto another that may have a different security model. But over the coming months and years, there will be a variety of additional application IBC-based you know, protocol applications that allow you to do more between two chains.
That's awesome.
So, So for instance, one that will probably come around this summer is what we call interchain accounts, which effectively allows you, rather than having to transfer tokens to another chain to be able to use the functionality on that chain, you can just use the functionality on that chain from the chain you're already on, right? So you can basically like have a wallet on a chain B that is controlled by chain A. And so that'll reduce the sort of number of transfers and make all the functionality on other chains available on one chain. And then, you know, further down the road, we'll also have interchain staking, which is the Cosmos version of shared security, which is also built on IBC, right? So the sort of idea for IBC was to have this very general purpose communication protocol above which we could build all the more advanced functionality, you know, different kinds of sharding, integrations with rollups, and other kinds of applications for more advanced communication between chains, essentially.
That makes sense. And I guess my other question there is, like, there's obviously a huge swirl of events going on Ethereum right now with layer twos and then other chains, which, you know, really didn't solve much, just centralized like Binance Smart Chain. But, you know, a lot of the stuff going on in layer twos on Ethereum is just, you know, comes into throughput versus security. A lot of the side chains, obviously, aren't too secure. A lot of the stuff with ZK rollups is really secure because you're linked to the base chain. How do you guys handle like supreme scale in that sense? Is it just a matter of choosing less validators for more scale for your app chain, or how do you get like that scale to run, you know, a decentralized perps exchange or decentralized, you know, exchange on Cosmos?
Lazy Ledger.
Oh, there we go. could you go into that a little bit, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'm going to butcher this. So Zucky or Ethan, please step in here. But what Lazy Ledger basically is it's going to be, they're making some improvements to the Cosmos SDK to allow this type of shared security, the base chain, and it splits the sort of consensus critical stuff and then the data availability over into a separate system. And that kind of allows for arbitrarily scalable Cosmos chains. Yeah, how did I do on that?
Reasonably. So Lazy Ledger is an optimistic rollup solution. So those are also being used to scale Ethereum. But the Lazy Ledger is building their optimistic rollup solution using Tendermint and the Cosmos SDK, so that rather than just being for, you know, EVM applications, it would be for Cosmos SDK applications. And there are, you know, trade-offs between optimistic rollups and ZK rollups, but the optimistic rollups are coming to Cosmos. And for scalability right now, the core sort of Tendermint consensus software can already process, you know, it's already much more scalable than what you get out of Ethereum, partially because the BFT consensus is faster than the proof of work consensus, but also because you're writing native Go applications rather than things that are compiled down to a virtual machine, a sort of software virtual machine like the EVM. So there's sort of inherently a lot more vertical scaling already. The current Cosmos Hub has a latency of about 7 seconds or so, which is somewhat artificial, and that could be improved depending on how aggressive you want to be or how you want to tweak things. We could get into why that is, but in principle, Tendermint has been tested to be able to do sub-second latency with tens of validators. So if you want to have like 64 validators or something like that, and still have like a couple second latency, that's still possible. And with that, you should be able to do hundreds, if not thousands of transactions per second. But then there's also a lot of improvements that are coming in terms of things like aggregate signatures that will allow us to reduce the amount of data that has to be transferred between validators. And that will also help reduce the latency. So that there's a bunch of scalability improvements that will come over the next couple of years that will allow validator sets to grow to hundreds, if not thousands, without too much impact.
That's awesome, Ethan. And I won't take credit for this next question. It's obviously, you know, crowdsourced from the group here, but I'll throw this one to Sunny. I mean, when you look at Cosmos, what is like the why for all of this? Like, why is Cosmos designed the way it is versus your peers?
Yeah, I think one of the main differences or like reasons why it's like designed this way is, I think there's a pretty common like design philosophy that's like throughout the Cosmos ecosystem, which is like a heavy focus on sovereign heterogeneous systems, like really believing in the ability for like communities to be like, you know, the sovereign, like the atomic unit in a lot of these things.
So, like, you know, we believe that, like, communities have the ability to build their own chain and be able to secure their own chain and not need, like, some globalized system to, like, force it. And this comes through the design of, like, you know, the Cosmos ecosystem as a whole with all these, like, sovereign application-specific chains. But I think, like, the same design paradigm, like, flows through all sorts of different things within the Cosmos ecosystem. So, you know, even the design for shared security, right? Like, this is, our design is way more bottom-up than, like, you know, the more top-down scaling solutions such as, like, or sharding, like, solutions. Like, you know, if you look at things like Polkadot or ETH 2.0, they're kind of very top down in the sense where they're like, okay, here's this, like, global system. We want to make sure everything is homogenous security wise across the entire thing, and so we're going to build this, like, system to, like, assign validators to different places, where it's like, no, you know, maybe if we're okay with more heterogeneous things, like, you know, we it's more bottom-up, more Hayekian, where it's like, okay, let the individual incentives drive the system towards, like, allocative efficiency. And then you see this on things like, you know, I think the design of, like, for example, how the Akash network works with, like, how they, how you choose, like, you know, which sort of nodes you want hosting your applications. And then this is something I've been looking, you know, I'm working on a project called Osmosis, where, like, you know, we're kind of applying a lot of that design philosophy towards, like, how to build AMMs.
Sunny, I have one follow-up question for you. Just to take, like, the devil's advocate side of this, like, let's say, and I'm, you know, brushing over a lot of technical stuff that I don't, you know, begin to claim an understanding of, but let's say, you know, ZK rollups and all that stuff on Ethereum works, right? And you inherit all the security of the base chain, you have all the scale of using an L2. Does it really matter if people or app chains have to choose their security to pay less if they could just pay such a small amount on Ethereum?
I think it if they can get the full security from the higher chain, that's great. You know, obviously, there are going to be costs to that. Like, you know, if you are gaining the security, there inevitably are going to be costs. But I think what's more important than the, like, you know, validator security is more about, like, the community governance and the ability for a community to, like, do their own upgrades, decide when to do irregular state changes, when to do hard forks, the ability for a community to, like, you know, not be subject to, like, the whims of a larger token holder set, right? And, like, you see an example of this would be, like, you know, in the last Ethereum upgrade, not the one that just happened last week, but the one from a couple months ago, there was, like, some changes in the pricing of certain opcodes, and it broke a bunch of contracts, most notably, like, the Aragon contracts. And the Aragon team was, like, you know, reasonably pretty upset about that, because it's like, hey, there was this, like, higher level change that we didn't consent to that was, like, pushed at the Ethereum wide level that broke our entire system. And, you know, we're going to see this happen, you know, especially when, like, the storage refunds are going to get removed. Like, who even knows how many contracts that's going to end up breaking. And so that's, I think, where it's, what it's more about is the ability to, like, not have things be changed from under you.
Yeah. And I think, Sunny, that's a great point. And this idea of sovereignty is kind of core to what Cosmos does. And when Sunny is talking about bottom up versus top down, you know, that is really deep in our DNA as an ecosystem. You know, if you listen to Bucky, has this amazing talk on sustainability and sort of, like, sustainable biofeedback loops within different communities and, like, how to like bootstrap a community with this kind of technology. And I've kind of always thought of putting a validator set together as a barn raising, and, like, it's a group of people getting together to build something, and it's like on top of all this cryptography, and it's really cool. Anyway, sorry, that was a slightly unfocused thought, but Sunny, you're absolutely here. There.
Yeah, and, like, especially, you know, to your point, like, yeah, the ZK rollups, like, I think if they can inherit the security of a more secure chain like Ethereum or the Cosmos Hub, that's great. But, like, I still believe that application-specific ZK rollups are going to end up winning out over, you know, these, like, you know, I think one misnomer I see in, like, the L2, like, community for Ethereum is I get this notion that everyone thinks L2 scaling is going to come by having one optimism chain that's, like, going to run run 10x the speed of Ethereum, and you know, there, ta-da, we solved Ethereum scaling, and we're just gonna shove all of DeFi on that one optimism chain. And I think that's just like pretty misguided. I do think that like that's not gonna really solve the fundamental problems, and we really do need to move towards a more application specific L2 world in order to actually solve real scaling problems.
I mean, there isn't one overarching government in the world. There is not going to be one chain to rule them all. Like, you know, this is one fallacy that I think we've run into in crypto over and over again. And for a long time, that's been Bitcoin. In this compute world, people thought it was Ethereum. And, you know, what Cosmos does is just acknowledges the reality that there is not going to be one chain to run everything. There's going to be a lot of different chains, and they need to talk.
If I can sort of jump in here, I think Sunny's sort of way of describing this kind of bottom-up design process is also mirrored, you know, on the human side, you know, on the very human sort of organizational governance side of things. You know, a lot of the times we're talking about highly technical concepts, you know, layer twos, scaling solutions, and so forth, but we forget that technical systems often mirror human systems and vice versa. And if I can speak a little bit about the human sort of system behind Cosmos, you know, it's an ecosystem of many entities, you know, like many, I don't even want to give a number, right? And all of these entities are constantly trying to coordinate, constantly trying to sort of come together, set agendas, set priorities, come up with a roadmap. And, you know, oftentimes it's hard because it is a bottom-up sort of grassroots effort. A lot of the times, I mean, there are sort of anchors of the ecosystem that do drive, you know, funding and sort of initiatives like the Interchain Foundation naturally. But at the same time, you know, it's reliant, the success is reliant on sort of this self-organizing kind of principles that sort of is integral to the ethos of Cosmos. So, you know, a lot of the times, again, in crypto and blockchains, we talk a lot about highly technical computer science, you know, topics, theories, but we, you know, should also really pay attention to the human governance behind all of this, because it will, to some degree, dictate, you know, the way that this technology is adopted and by whom and for what purpose.
That was awesome, Yelena. And just to round out the example, can you guys give me an example of, and you don't have to name names or projects, like that's not why we're here. I'm just trying to get a little more illustrative with it. But can you give me an example of maybe an issue that could happen on another chain that wouldn't here, or like a, you know, the buy-in of the community? Like, you know, I just think of like Ethereum with like all the, you know, GPUs and the miners versus like the actual community, and it's like all stupid. But yeah, just any like specific example would be really helpful there.
Well, I think the example that Sunny gave and that I mentioned earlier of Aragon, their application breaking without their permission, wouldn't happen on an application-specific Cosmos chain because it would be the thing coordinating the upgrade, right? So when Ethereum upgrades and it breaks one of the biggest apps and that app sort of had no say in the matter, that's lack of sovereignty. Like, that's one of the key things that Cosmos is prioritizing for.
So I just want to go like a little bit more like finer grained on that issue, which is like Ethereum, from their point of view, was solving a denial of service vector from like mispriced opcodes. So they're like, we have mispriced opcodes. Like, if somebody wants to, they can cheaply like slow down the entire chain. This is bad for everyone. But a specific application, which was like the Gnosis DAO contracts, was like, well, our application depends on the gas price of certain opcodes being within a certain range. And the Ethereum core devs, rightly for Ethereum, prioritized like the consensus security of the entire chain over a specific application. But in the Cosmos model, people are allowed to make a lot more subtle and interesting trade-offs where they're like, well, we are not writing a general purpose application. Maybe, you know, a gas mispricing issue or how a transaction is structured. Another example of this is on Terra. In Terra, all validators are also run oracles. They run price oracles for the stable coins that are on the Terra network. And the fees for the Terra oracle messages are like, there's like one fee level for validator messages, because you have to be a validator in the validator set. You have to have a huge amount of stake staked in order to be a Terra validator. And you don't have to worry about spam really from the validator set. And so you can charge like specific application specific fees so that like the stable coin remains stable and like the Terra network can prioritize that. And like if, you know, the people who are using Terra Swap are paying more fees, but the validators pay less fees to run the consensus messages, like that makes entirely sense. And so again, like the Terra application, like dev team is able to make application specific trade-offs at like across the entire sort of economy of the system. Another thing that would also happen is like, you know, there was a security vulnerability again related to a gas mispricing issue on Terra, and like that didn't affect any other chain on Cosmos, which all just kept, you know, trucking along. And this is kind of, again, the fault isolation that we want on the Cosmos ecosystem, where like a single application developer who has a problem on a single application chain, like doesn't affect the entire system.
At the end, and another related to that is like, at the end of the day, I think everything comes to trade-offs. Like, you know, that when you're building a chain, you're making a trade-off between, you know, scalability and decentralization to an extent. Or, you know, oftentimes you make a trade-off between like security and ease of use. And, you know, trying to find a one size fits them all kind of is kind of not a great strategy. It just doesn't work at the end of the day. And the point of like the Cosmos model is that says like, hey, every chain, you know, every application has different needs for like where they want to be on different trade-off curves. And so we should allow them all to explore and like choose the best trade-offs for their application rather than being subject to this like trying to find one size fits them all. And yeah.
So that was awesome, guys. I want to save the last 10 minutes just to talk about value accrual. So I've been talking to Joe a lot on the side about this after I saw the Messari graphic. You know, value accrual is something we spend a lot of time on our venture side. So like it's something we're keenly interested in. We want to make sure the value created kind of there's a way to capture that. How do you guys think through that with the Atom token itself? And obviously, I don't want any like, you know, investment figures thrown around or anything like that. It's not why we're here. But how do you think through the value accrual side of things with Cosmos and Atom?
I think the main value accrual is going to be through the shared security. I think that the Cosmos Hub is going to be like the best place within the Cosmos ecosystem to be able to lease security from. And having atoms is what gives you the right to be like part of this. You can think of it almost like a union of like all these validators and, you know, stake that like, okay, here's $5 billion that's available for like, you know, leasing this much amount of security. And you can earn, and when a chain wants to lease that security, it will be paying the atom holders. It could be paying them in atoms. It could be paying them in the chain's own native tokens. But having, you need atoms to be able to earn all those rewards and get the opportunity to validate all these chains throughout the Cosmos ecosystem.
Makes a lot of sense. And is there a way for other holders in the future? Like, you know, obviously like a lot of projects just have, you know, straight up staking and things like that. Do you guys envision any type of fee flow from those transfers or anything there to be able to flow back to the atom holders?
Definitely. I mean, it's already the case that fees get paid to atom holders. And as you know, I've always sort of found the value capture obsession people in the space a little bit backwards because it's like, hey, build a thing. And before anyone uses it, you know, make sure you're capturing value. You know, it's sort of like, it's like make a useful thing and you'll figure out value capture as you go. I don't know if any of us are paying for Clubhouse, but like Clubhouse is certainly taking that model of build something useful, get users, and you'll figure out the value story. And that's always the approach we took with Cosmos. It was like, let's build the most useful thing at the time. And when value capture is you know, quote unquote, is something useful, you know, that's when we'll focus on it. But in the meantime, you know, we'll focus on adoption and providing value to the world. And I think that's what we've done. That's why we've seen, you know, Cosmos at this point, I think is pretty clearly, if not just arguably, the most popular blockchain development platform after Ethereum. And that's because, you know, I think the values we injected into the technology and because we didn't obsess over, you know, capturing value into a single coin and trying to wrap everyone into like a single, you know, monolithic political economic scheme. As for the Cosmos Hub, you know, and Atom, I mean, the Cosmos Hub hasn't really had too much of a use case yet. It's just been like just another blockchain, or, you know, a lot of people thought of it as like, oh, it's some experiment in on-chain governance. And for some time it was, I mean, it was really proving out. You got to keep in mind, we're in a different world now than we were 2 years ago. 2 years ago, there were hardly any proof of stake chains. You know, now there's dozens of them live or launching. And a lot of that was, you know, because of the proof in the pudding of the Cosmos Hub. But in the world of IBC, where now you have all of these different proof of stake chains and they're all going to want to start talking to each other, and you're going to have all these problems of service discovery and identity and verification and different kinds of security you're going to want over certain operations. The Cosmos Hub is the only one that's specifically targeting the use case of serving all of these other chains, of really being a hub for them. And so the expectation is that there is going to be a lot of value flowing through the Cosmos Hub for a variety of reasons, whether it's because two chains just want to connect, whether it's because of shared security, whether it's because there's a DEX there and it's the fastest way, you know, to do interchain exchange or something like that. So we're going to see a ton more use cases emerge, both for the Atom token itself in terms of new features on the Cosmos Hub that will require you to have atoms to use. For instance, to open a pool on the new DEX, you have to pay a certain number of atoms. There'll be more cases like that, but also we'll expect to see larger fee flow in many different currencies, not just atoms, but in other currencies as well, through features like shared security and other kinds of, you know, interchain routing and so on. So there's, you know, it's very much a build something valuable and then value capture will come, rather than like figure out all the value capture story up front and then you can delay actually delivering value. So again, we're sort of that much more bottom-up approach.
Yeah, so one thing I do want to just quickly touch on here. Sunny gave us the vision in the far future. Bucky gave us where we came from. Let me talk about where we're at now. Zucky put out something called Atom 2021 last year, and in that he identified a few key things that we need to do as the hub to capture some value and to move into this kind of next phase of the interchain. One of those is the DEX, and we are going to be launching a DEX here on the Cosmos Hub very soon. It's called the Gravity DEX. It's been in development for a little while. We've got about 15,000 people signed up for the test competition that's starting in a couple of weeks. There's about 10 hours left to register for that. So if you haven't done so, go ahead and get out there. And then, you know, obviously, sort of being the hub, having a place to exchange value is pretty critical. And this DEX is going to be critical to value capture on the hub. Another piece is staking derivatives. So right now, all of the capital that's locked up in staking on the Cosmos Hub can't be traded. Those shares of the staking can't be moved around. Staking derivatives is a feature to allow you to sell those, move them around, securitize them, and offer more financial products on top of those staked atoms, and offer actually better security for the underlying network. And then finally, another big piece of it is the Gravity Bridge, which is what Zaki and I are working on, which is a way to allow Cosmos chains to talk to Ethereum-based chains in a very generalized way. So think Ethereum main chain, think Optimism, think Binance Smart Chain, and that'll be coming later this year as well.
That's awesome. I'm super excited for that. And guys, this is awesome. I mean, you packed so much info into 55 minutes with multiple people. Is incredible. Let's just go again. Just Jack, we'll start with you. We'll end with Ethan. Just say your name again because it's audio. There's a lot of people on. I want to make sure everyone knows who everyone is. And just shill again real quickly what you're working on so people can check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, my name is Jack Zamplin. And what I'm working on right now is something called Sommelier Finance. We're building tooling for liquidity providers over on Ethereum using the Cosmos technology. I'm working on that with Zucky, and I'd encourage you guys to go check it out. Go to app.sommelier.finance today. We're working on something special for Uniswap V3 as well, so be on the lookout for that.
That's awesome. Joe?
So I'm Ethan Buckman. I'm at Informal Systems. You can find us informal.systems. We run the Cephalopod equipment validator, so that's a little octopus validator if you're looking for a place to delegate. We built Hermes, which is a relayer for IBC. So it's one of the ways that the actual packets get transferred between chains. And we do a lot of protocol design and formal verification work. And we're building tools to make it easier, for instance, for developers, not just blockchain developers, any developers, to write advanced tests with much smaller amounts of code, things like that. So we're sort of trying to commercialize some of the research in correctness assurance and in testing and so on to make software safer overall, both for the blockchain world and beyond.
I love it. We're a little out of order, but Yana, you want to go?
Well, Ethan covered it. I work with Ethan every day at Informal, so I think we're good on that front.
Hell yeah. Zucky? Who doesn't know Zucky at this point? Sorry to keep asking this.
Jack and I are working together on Sommelier Finance, but there's like, so Jack was highlighting the stuff that we are doing for Ethereum liquidity providers. We are also sort of bringing about both the Gravity DEX to maturity with a bunch of partners like Althea to bring the Gravity DEX to the hub. And like one of the other things I'm really excited about is the work we're doing on the distribution module, which is a subcomponent of Cosmos that was like one of our core innovations to enable proof of stake to scale to millions of delegators. But like that whole system can be upgraded to enable like a whole new generation of DeFi sort of reward systems and farming and liquidity rewards and all the kind of thing, innovations that we've started to see on Ethereum to be really scaled up on Cosmos. So that's another area that we're particularly excited to be working on.
I love it. Sunny, last but not least.
Hey, yeah. My name's Sunny, and I'm working on a project called Osmosis. It's going to be the most powerful DEX within the Cosmos ecosystem, and really focusing a lot on especially the MEV resistance and like preventing front running and things like that. So you should check it out. Launching soon. And if you had Atoms on February 18th, you already have some Osmo tokens. So get ready to stake and be an LP provider.
I love that. And just a shout out, Joe, thanks so much for getting everyone here and organizing this. I really enjoyed the everyone's time today.
Oh, well, Joe's working on something interesting, too.
Yeah, Joe, shoot, man.
I'd just like to thank everyone for coming and joining us here. And I want everyone to check out cosmos.network. There's a sweet new site. You'll have fun exploring around there. And then I think it's gravitydex.io where you can get signed up for the trading competition. There's going to be like $200,000 plus in prizes given away. It's free to enter, and you'll get to play around with the DEX/AMM and not have to pay insane gas fees for it. So, and that's about it. Oh yeah,
well,
and I'm running
34.
I'm running a marketing campaign that the funds were given to us through on-chain governance. The Atom holders voted yes on getting a Ground Roots organic marketing campaign going, and I'm just a pleb that decided to help run it, and it's amazing, and I love the Cosmos community, so check it out.
Don't sell yourself short, you're crushing it.
Joe, you are. Well, guys, thanks everyone for your time. Impactful 60 minutes, and I want to respect everyone's time. So we'll all talk soon. But thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon. Mm-hmm.